Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, as you've no doubt been hearing this morning, Sean McGovern, one of the leading members of the Kinahan Organised Crime Group, is currently en route to Ireland on an Air Corps military plane, having been extradited from the United Arab Emirates. He's wanted for the murder of Noel Kerwin, an innocent man who was shot dead as part of the Hutch Kinahan feud in December 2016, and directing an organised crime gang. Now, he's expected to land in Ireland later on this afternoon when he'll be formally arrested. Let's get more on this now with Conor Gallagher, Irish Times crime and security correspondent and former Assistant Garda Commissioner Michael O'Sullivan. Conor, I'll come to you first on this, just for the background, because we only got the news, didn't we, last night around the extradition after the plane had left the UAE. So what's been happening?
Yeah, this was an operation that took place in very high secrecy. Such were the sensitivities around it. I think officials were worried about possible last-minute snags on the UAE side if word got out. So everyone was sworn to secrecy, and news only emerged after the Air Corps' aircraft took off from Al Maktoum Airport and began making the long journey back towards Dublin last night. So we're expecting McGovern, a 39-year-old man, to land in Baldonnell Air Base sometime, or at Caithness Aerodrome, sometime in the early afternoon, late afternoon or early evening. The plane has to make several stops to refuel along the way. Once he gets here, there'll be another ferry, a complex security operation to get him to the Special Criminal Court. He'll likely be brought straight to the Special Criminal Court in the Criminal Courts of Justice, where the charges will be put to him, and he'll most likely be remanded in custody to a later date.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a bit more about him. What's his alleged position within the Kinahan cartel?
He's a very, very senior member of the cartel. In fact, he was one of seven members of the cartel sanctioned by the US authorities in 2022. People remember that big announcement where they announced the $15 million reward for the leadership of the cartel. The US Treasury Department called him Daniel Kinahan's advisor and closest confidant, and stated that there's evidence that basically, if you want to get to Daniel Kinahan, the de facto leader of the cartel, you have to go through Sean McGovern. They've known each other for a long, long time. McGovern manages all the communications on behalf of Kinahan, and he's also involved in selling multi-kilogram quantities of cocaine, according to US authorities. Now, he's been living in Dubai for a good number of years now, quite openly, even since the sanctions have been put in place. And he seemed to have been of the belief that the Dubai authorities would not arrest him. But of course, that belief was proven wrong last year when he was arrested and brought into custody.
I remember it wasn't so long ago that people were really questioning whether there would ever be an extradition deal, Conor, between the UAE and Ireland. Now we see this happening again. Is it expected that there will be more of these types of cases?
I think authorities here in Ireland certainly hope so and are planning for that. In fact, McGovern's was arrested before the extradition deal was signed, and his extradition is taking place, I understand, under an ad hoc kind of one-off deal between the two countries. But now we have an official extradition deal in place that will apply to all cases. It will make it a lot easier and perhaps a lot quicker if and when they're able to get the other senior members of the cartel, mm-hmm. or indeed other organised crime groups. There are quite a number of them living in Dubai.
Oh, Conor, stay with us because I want to bring in Michael O'Sullivan. Michael, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Assistant Garda Commissioner, of course. Now, we've been hearing all about Sean McGovern there from Conor. How significant is this extradition and this appearance later on at the Special Criminal Court, in your view?
Well, the whole extradition is a seismic change. You know, there's a lot of criminals, both Irish and other international criminals, in the UAE, and they've been there for quite a long time, operating from there as their base, and they're very comfortable in the knowledge that they're very safe there. Like, it's a safe haven. It has always been a safe haven. In fact, within the last couple of years, I think there were two cases. One, a mafia figure, Rafael Imperial, and another one, a Moroccan guy, he was sent back to the Netherlands. So the bottom line is they feel very, very safe. So the removal of this cloak of safety, this safety net for those in not just in the Kinahan organized crime group, but in general, because a lot of countries are very keen to take some of their criminals out of the UAE. It's sort of seen as the last refuge. They used to be in the south of Spain, but then with closer police cooperation and European arrest warrants, they moved to where beyond what they thought was the reach of European and other international police forces. But that's no longer the case. So it's a huge wake-up call. Mm.
I mean, you mentioned Spain there. I mean, the trail goes to the Netherlands as well, because that was once a refuge, wasn't it? So the Netherlands, Spain, the UAE, and that looks as though that's gone now if you're looking for a safe place to hide out.
It certainly is. And for Irish criminals, even here, their fallback plan is guys who are currently in the jurisdiction who were involved in organised crime. Their fallback plan is that if things get too hot and heavy, they're going to fall back to the UAE, the same as everybody else has. But now that's removed. So they're running out of options. The world has suddenly become a smaller place for them, and the bubble has burst.
What was the key to that changing? Was it the Americans getting involved that time when they pointed a finger at these people and at the UAE?
Yeah, it's very difficult to say. The UAE have known about the Kinahan organised crime group since 2016, 2017, and are well aware of it. And then, of course, with John O'Driscoll, who used the initiative of working with the Americans. And once you brought the Americans and the Department of Treasury and the DEA and all of those enforcement agencies into the game, the world became a smaller place, and it was just added pressure. But still, you know, it has taken quite a while, and obviously there were moves afoot which made the UAE people realize, okay, enough is enough, and we're going to send this guy back, which is hugely worrying, as I say.
But you'd agree that once the Americans got involved, and you're right, we shouldn't forget John O'Driscoll, and it's such a shame that he's not here to see this today. But once the Americans got on board, that the game was up, really.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Like various countries, a lot of countries have extradition warrants for criminals, and it depends on the relationship between that country, really, and the country where the criminals are residing. But once the Americans get involved, they hold so much power, so much sway. People are anxious to stay close to them for a whole variety of reasons. And they have such a global reach that there's not many countries you can go to if the Americans are looking for you. Mm-hmm. And various governments, obviously, trying to keep on side with the Americans.
Michael, you're well acquainted with Christy Kinahan Sr. yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, I arrested him back a long time ago, back in 1986. Mm-hmm. And he was at the time he was running a heroin distribution network. He was in charge of the heroin distribution for all of Dublin City in around 86, 87, and I arrested him at a luxury apartment, and he subsequently served 6 or 7 years. He then went on to the Netherlands, where he also became involved in crime, and moved then down to Spain and built up his network. By working in the likes of the Netherlands and by working in Spain, he interacted with guys from South America. I was a Turkish mafia with the Russian mafia. So it became a melting pot, and he built up an excellent network, which has stood to this day.
He still found the time, though, to follow you a couple of years after his arrest, I assume, once he was released from prison after that initial sentence.
Yeah, when he was released, and unknown to us that he was released, I was in the city centre, and I was jogging through the city centre, and I felt that I was being followed. I saw this car, and it was Chris Kinahan. He was following me to see where I was going. So I checked with after I sort of gave him a slip, I checked with the prison, and I realised he had got some early release. So a couple of years later, I met him again. I was interviewing him, and he effectively reminded me that he followed me at the time. So I had told him that I'd seen his car.
Right.
Yeah. He's that sort of an individual. He can be quite devious and quite strategic in the way he operates.
But also doesn't forget, and hadn't forgotten you, clearly.
Oh, he doesn't forget anything. No, he will hold a grudge for a long, long time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But as you say, you know, and you'd love to know what the vibe is amongst this group in light of what happened last night.
Well, definitely, it's a nightmare scenario for them. They're going to have to, their exit plan B is going to have to come a whole lot closer, and they're going to have to plan and wonder and watch to see will there be a knock on the door. And, you know, they're coming, they have to really, you now have to be lucky all the time, and law enforcement only have to be lucky once. And they really have to be on their guard now, and they are obviously extremely worried.
Mm-hmm. It's fascinating to watch, and there'll be more on this in the afternoon when that plane lands. Michael, thanks for being with us, but I want to come back to Conor Gallagher. Good to talk to you, Michael. Conor, I just want to separately ask you about that story you have this morning about the scaling back of the Irish military flight operations. Moving to part-time now, what's the background to this? It's about a staff shortage, is it?
That's right, specifically an acute shortage of military air traffic controllers based in Casement Aerodrome, which is the Air Corps headquarters and indeed only base out in Dublin, out in County Dublin. So this has been a long time coming in the pipeline. The 505 Squadron is responsible for air traffic control at Baldonnell, which is a surprisingly busy location. You've got helicopters and planes taking off all the time. It's supposed to have 21 personnel. In recent years, it's been operating at about 50% capacity, so they've been hanging on by a thread. Now, five of those people, roughly, are going to the private sector where it's better paid and better conditions. And that means they've had to take the quite drastic step of moving to Monday to Friday, daytime only operation. And the situation is so bad, I'm told, that if one or two other people decide to depart, they would likely have to shut down flight operations altogether, something which would have huge implications across not only the Air Corps and Defence Forces, but other services like the Gardaí and HSE.
But there's already huge implications, according to what you've written today, with the reduced hours.
That's right. So I suppose the most immediate effect will be on the Garda Air Support Unit. It operates two helicopters and one surveillance fixed-wing aircraft out of Baldonnell. They've been scrambling to find alternative arrangements because, of course, the weekends and nighttime is probably the most busy time for the Garda helicopters. So it just wouldn't make sense to have to continue operating out of Baldonnell. They've been looking at various options, Dublin Airport, Colbrew Barracks in Rathmines. It looks like they're probably going to go and base themselves at a Western airport. Other services which may be affected, emergency air ambulance flights. I mean, even things like we were just discussing there, Sean McGovern's on an Air Corps flight back from Dubai. Although planned operations like that will continue to be able to be carried off, I'm told. Mm-hmm. The Air Corps themselves are going to have to start basing at least one of their maritime patrol aircraft out of Shannon. All of this is going to have huge cost implications because these are private airfields and airports. So you're going to have to pay landing fees, parking fees, fuel, subsistence and mileage and hotels for the crews who are going to have to move out west. And I think there's a feeling of kind of despair and intense frustration within the Air Corps because all of this could have been avoided. All of this was coming down the track for a long time.
They say they have more air traffic controllers in training, but the problem is it's pay, isn't it? And people are getting more attractive offers and understandably they're taking them up.
Pay is one part of it, but arguably a bigger part of it is career progression. So lots of these administrative quirks within the Air Corps and the Defence Force more broadly means people are, it's very slow to climb up the ladder and get on the higher pay grades. A major report was carried out in 2021 after a previous instance where the Air Corps had to go to part-time hours. And it recommended, more than anything else, a pilot retention scheme. So basically, the longer you stay, a retention scheme for air traffic controllers. So basically, the longer you stay in the service, the more money you get increments. That was rolled out to pilots and was quite successful at keeping pilots in. These are people they've spent an awful lot of money training, and it makes sense to keep them there. But it wasn't rolled out for air traffic controllers, despite the recommendation of this report. And that leaves us in the situation we're in today.
OK, Conor, thank you very much for bringing us up to date on all of that. That's Conor Gallagher, crime and security correspondent with the Irish Times. And we also heard from Michael O'Sullivan there, former assistant Garda commissioner. Now, coming up next, we're going to hear about last night's Sinn Féin vote to ban the sale of Israeli bonds.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.